What is up, folks? Ty here, Bench Clear Media, Breaker Culture. Super excited to have you here for the Hobbypalooza. Obviously, a lot of work's been put in the last, the last 2 weeks. Mike and I have been slaving over this. We're excited to take part in it as well. So I have two sessions. I have today's session right now, and I have one tomorrow. But today I wanted to grab a couple of my favorite card shop owners and let you as a group just ask them questions and kind of go behind the scenes so you can understand kind of the, mindset of a card shop owner. I know a lot of times we walk in, we have conversations, and I get the chance to talk to a lot of these guys anyway through different things that we've been involved in. But it's always fun to get these guys in, especially someone like PJ, who just recently started his card shop, Collectible Kings, and Marcel Bylak, who's owned a card shop for well over a decade, left and then came back. And so it's a good perspective, and I thought it'd be really fun for all of us to just have a laid-back conversation. So let me bring these guys in. Marcel, what's up? PJ, what's up? I know PJ's got an event going on, so he's in and out. Marcel, what's up, brother?
What is up?
I know how you're extremely excited about today. You told me you couldn't there even you sleep go. Last night.
Just waiting for the moment. I definitely do not. I mean, I've got my work cut out for me, but I definitely do not want to be in your shoes right now. A lot of work goes into making this awesome the way it was last year.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is just about every content creator owns their own piece. And all we do is just facilitate all the good stuff behind the scenes. So it's not that bad. The hardest part's moving to Idaho. Like, I don't think having six kids, right, and moving a family across the country is no easy task. But when you're moving in the middle of an historic heat wave, it ain't fun. So,
hey, I'm just checking in here. Is my audio okay? Everything's good with that?
You sound good.
All right.
Mike, what's up? Ron, what's up? Kevin, how's it going, Four Leaf? All right. So first off, what's going on behind you? It looks like you got your banner ready. I know we're going to be spending some time together out at the National. Yeah. Is that your?
So we got. So again, I just opened up a new card shop. For those of you that are just popping in, I used to have a shop here in town, in Las Vegas, for about 13 years, and it was cool. Shop's name was Legacy. I sold it, got out of it, kept one foot in the hobby, and when COVID happened and Zion happened and all that happened, I instead of having one foot in, I suddenly had 2 feet back in, and I opened up this new card shop. I opened up this card shop called the Awesome Card Shop, and it's in Las Vegas. It's in the same spot my old card shop was. So I just made this banner over here. It's for the National, but it's a beautiful banner, so I'm displaying it here at the shop. And that's the deal. Yeah,
looks like there's awesome a printing card. Mistake. There's a little, like, it's kind of fuzzy on the bottom of that banner. I don't know what's going on there. you and your techie QR code. I can't believe you've pulled that off. Well done. you know, it's funny because you left the hobby with your card shop, at least. Basically right before everything accelerated. And then you got back in, you know, 4 or 3 months ago, and then everything starts falling again. Do you notice a pattern? Does it worry you?
Oh gosh. Well, you know what? It's all the sage advice I get from my my Kansas City connection. He won't even call me. He moved states. So
yeah, that's fair.
I get on the phone and the brain trust starts working and come up with these bright ideas.
we'll dig into that here in a little bit. We'll get into the nuts and bolts of a card shop and what you're going through. First off, vintage baseball card packs, fourth hour watching. I can concur. I've been doing stuff with AirPods in, listening all day, so I can relate to that. Have you been able to tune into stuff? I know you're at the shop today doing stuff. Have you had any episodes on in the background, Marcel?
I tried to load them up a couple of times, but it was just customer after customer, and so I never got a chance to listen to anything. But I'll be replaying all the stuff after. I love listening to it. So
cool. All right, before we dig into the card shop stuff, I want to talk about, and you're a Dodgers fan, I know, so you're in LA a lot, but help me understand, like what, how crazy is what Ohtani's doing right now? Like, I feel like this is one of those moments in sports where it's like, it's almost transcending sports, and kind of non-sports people are talking about that Japanese, you know, home run hitter type thing. And you rarely get those moments. And when you do, it's just kind of like, okay, this is pretty cool. Are you starting to feel that in the shop?
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. I mean, here, you know, we're in Vegas. We're like an LA, we're a hop and a skip away from LA. So we get a lot of people talking about Mike Trout and the Dodgers and Kershaw, but now the song that's being sung is Ohtani, and it's super exciting. Just like you said, it's almost magical, right? Like, this guy's, well, I saw something, there was an MLB post the other day, like, I think they wrote half, like, or baseball player that's closest to a real life superhero. that was the heading, but that's kind of what it's like, right? We got a pitcher that's hitting bombs like Babe Ruth. It's just crazy, man. And what if he wouldn't have got hurt, right? Because he came into the league, he got hurt. And I mean, if he would have never got hurt and he did this for 2-3 years, I mean, I sold some really nice Ohtani cards. Like 6 months ago. Before it all started, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. No, it's I'm trying to relate it to other moments in sports, and like, it's really hard to think back at a time where you, I mean, obviously the Maguire Sosa thing, that transcended kind of sports fans. I feel like Mahomes has done that in certain situations where non-sports people talk about, like Patrick Mahomes, but it's kind of neat to see this in baseball right now. Cause it's just, I feel like it hit it just the right time. And as a hobby guy, it's right. You gravitate towards those players that you think can transcend into those moments. What an opportunity to buy Ohtani last year, right? I mean, my goodness, what a gift.
Such an opportunity. I had some great Ohtani cards up on eBay for 2 years. I was getting low ball offers from when I listed them to where I sold them. It was like 30, 40% less than I thought I would get. And if I would have just held them for another 3-4 months, you know, sky would have been the limit. So, but yeah, that story, right? Everybody knows that story.
Everybody knows that story. No doubt. No doubt. PJ, are you back? Are you still kind of hanging around? What's going on? I'm going to let him wrap up something. He's got some magic event. Do you do that stuff? Do you have like Pokemon and magic and all that stuff going on in your store yet?
So, you know, it's interesting. The first week we opened up the shop, we had, I think it was ABC was here. ABC News called me. They wanted to do a special on what was going on at Target with all the people waiting in line and lining up trying to get retail product to resell it. But the piece that he did was mostly on Pokemon. So the guy showed up to my shop. I figured I'd get like, you know, 3 seconds. It ended up being like a special on my shop. It was like a 45-second piece on my shop, all my shop, but it was all about Pokemon. So ever since I opened up the new shop, I'm getting hit up for Pokemon left and right, left and right. So not so much magic. You asked me about magic, but Pokemon is hot right now here. You cannot stop the Pikachu love, man. So I love it, man. I got my first Pokemon card the other day. It's so cool.
Don't even. I'm not going to allow it to go down this path. Do you find that getting access to Pokemon cards is easier than getting access to sports cards right now from a wax perspective?
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah,
really?
Period. Yeah. I mean, day of release. I mean, I know a lot of people, and there's a lot of people I can call right before it releases and get it on the day of release and get it at a fair price where I can resell it quickly and make a decent profit. That's easy. I mean, try to call and get some diamond icons this week.
Yeah.
On release day and get it at a decent price so you can resell it to your customers. A much more difficult feat. And Pokemon is on fire. I'm enjoying it. And I'm learning a lot about another sector that, even though I carried it before, I just didn't know a lot about it. And I'm having fun with it. You know, I'm expanding the shop and its scope. I was very much so all sports last time. And in the sense that I'm opening up to the idea of having more Pokemon and having other things other than autographed baseballs, jerseys, hobby boxes, sports cards, etc. So we're carrying, like, I got a bunch of Marvel cards, Pokemon cards. I've got some Pokemon framed pieces, and the shop looks like, have you ever seen one of those Japanese shops that has all the like cool anime? My shop is literally, hold up a second. My shop is literally awesome.
Okay. I need to talk to the real Marcel Bielak. Where have you captured and stored him?
Wait, I do want to mention, anybody that's listening to this today, if you're listening, I've got,
well, there are 62 people listening right now.
Okay, awesome. I got a half a dozen awesome card shop t-shirts that I'm giving away. All you have to do is go on to Facebook or Instagram, like us, and mention that you heard me say this on this cast. Yep. And cool. we'll send you a free shirt. And they're really cool. It's got the logo on the back. It's a nice knit blend. It's not like one of those t-shirts you buy at the Kiss concert and then you want to throw it away right after you're done because it shrunk two sizes. It's like really awesome. So
The joke last night was that Mike Moynihan was attending a Britney Spears concert, not a country music concert. So maybe the t-shirts at Britney Spears. All right, before I want to start taking some questions here, because you do run a card shop and you left and came back. Before we do that though, what was your vision going into the awesome card shop this time around? Because I know you have this grandiose idea of what you want to create, and it's going to be different than what people are used to in a card shop. Paint the vision real quick for the awesome card shop, and then I'm going to let people just ask you questions about running a card shop in a big city like Vegas.
Okay. Well, so I definitely wanted to make it different than other card shops, and I wanted to do something special, and I wanted to create a connection with my city. And you know, and that's the thing, people play off strengths within their city. Suddenly I'm echoing. I wasn't before. You good?
You're good. Yep, you're good.
All right. So off the strengths that my city has, and people should use that. And so we branded the shop with the Las Vegas logo, and the shop is completely different than anybody's ever seen. I have a beautiful, brand new blackjack table right when you walk up. It's got the logo on the shop, and the container where normally you'd put the chip stack is a trash can. So that's actually my breaking table, and I'm currently having slot machines refurbished. They're going to have my logo on the glass, and all the reels will allow customers to spin the reels, and the reels will be baseball or baseball cards or football cards or supplies and win things. So I'm really trying to tie in Las Vegas and what is a strength here in Las Vegas, which is gambling, even though there's no gambling at my shop. But I'm trying to tie that in and let people know that when they come to Vegas, they should visit the awesome card shop. At some point, if anyone has a chance here, go on our social media. Our website's not live, but you'll see pictures of the shop. This thing will be, it's 98% done in the next couple of weeks when I have the finishing touches. There won't be a single shop like my shop. in the country. It's special. It's different. The merchandise that I carry is different. I'm trying to attract the same crowd that is online watching Breakers, and that younger crowd that, you know, that watches Breakers, likes anime, likes Pokemon, that likes all that. My shop is kind of geared towards that. It's a very interesting thing. I don't know when we'll get here, but we ordered a Bitcoin ATM as well. Again, so I'm trying to bring that crowd, that crowd that's just a couple generations younger than I am, into the mix.
Just a couple generations? Come on now.
Hey man, I got a couple good ones for you. Okay, you better watch out. All right.
Oh, shoot, you're right. You do. You do. No, man, I love it. I love that you're blending the new wave of collectors. Right. I think a lot of times, if you walk into the traditional card shop, it's stodgy, it's stuffy, and that new collector just kind of doesn't connect. And if we want to do what we really want to do as a hobby and grow the right way, hobby shops have to adapt to this new culture. And so I love it. I love that you're doing that. No gambling, open packs gambling. No. Can I play sports card, poker for sports cards, Zion poker buy-in? That's good.
Well, that's the thing, people see the blackjack table and they're like, oh, you guys, we can play blackjack here? And not really.
But no, I don't know how much you can talk about with your good.
No, I'm going to say this. You said stodgy, and you know, people can't be afraid to grow and change. That's the thing. And I did some breaking in the past. I'm not a breaker or a premier breaker, but I know it's important part of the hobby now and of the culture. So for instance, we started a break once a week here at the shop. It's every Sunday. It's at 5 o'clock. It always pops off. Since I started the shop, it's been filled every Sunday. And you know, you have to adapt, right? Like, hey, it's easier for me to do what I know how to do, sell a hobby box, sell a sports card, list a sports card. But the market in the hobby is in a different place than it was when I launched the first shop. So I have to adapt, and with adapting, I have a chance at growth. So you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, 100%. So let's talk about that. That's a good segue. So when you look at the hobby right now, and I feel like it's changing every week, you got to get a different vibe. What's kind of your take on the hobby, July 10th, 2021, and how do you feel about your entrance back into the hobby?
Well, you and I were on a podcast a few months ago.
Yeah.
And I said that I thought that as soon as COVID restrictions let up, that people would start going to ball games, going to movies, traveling, eating out, living life, etc., and spending discretionary income elsewhere. And that, in fact, is what has happened. So in the last 3-4 months, I know it's been talked about, the hobby market has softened. Things are still good, things are still strong, but everyone's seen the hobby market soften. And I think it's just directly correlated to the fact that people are spending money elsewhere, but it's still great. It's a great time to be in the hobby. There's so many more collectors. The base has expanded, and even though it's retracted because the pool of money is smaller now, people's dollars are being spent elsewhere. And I think it's going to retract a little bit further. I actually think when the COVID relief funds run out in September, I think unemployment rates are going to go up. I think that people are going to run out of that money, and I think there's going to be less hobby dollars. But at the end of the day, there's just so many more people that are now in the hobby, like sports cards, like collecting, and are part of this, that I think it still spells an overall bull market for us. So it's a good time.
Yeah. Let me ask it to you this way. How does a card shop? Cause I mean, a lot of your revenue, I don't know if you know the splits, but obviously you have sealed wax you're buying, you have a distributor cost, you're going to make good money on that stuff given. But when you're buying people's collections or cards and then you're reselling them in your store and the market pulls back 40%, what do you do as a card shop to protect yourself to make sure that you're able to move inventory fast enough to make good business decisions?
So everyone's talking about that. And you just have to be really careful. One of the things that I'm doing right now is, and I don't know what others are doing, but I won't buy cards that I can't comp to a very well degree. So if I go to look up a card and I only have 3 sales, I'm not buying that card. I need to have multiple sales. So I'm just not buying pop 3 cards. I'm not buying cards that are numbered to 5 that are just super rare. And there's only one comp out there because I don't know where the market's going and there's so much fluctuation. You could get hurt. I've been speaking to some card shops that bought some key cards of key guys, you know, Kobe's and Tom Brady's graded, and they bought them, you know, 60 days ago and they're worth 20-30% less. So I'm careful on what I buy and I'm hedging my bets. So when consumers come in and they want to sell me a card, customers come in, they want to sell me a card. I go, I figure out what the card's worth, and then I let them know that, you know, I'm actually paying considerably less than the comp because I'm hedging my bet against a further decrease in the market. People are still selling to me, but I'm just careful what I pick, and I immediately turn it around. You know, the idea of, oh, I've got a great card. It's a Brady. It's greater than 8. I'll get around to it when I get around to it. No, when they walk out the door, I have that card. It's going online. I'm not waiting to see where the market takes it. I'm immediately listing the card.
Got it. So what's a fair number? So it's been a while since I've walked into a card shop and sold something. It's usually obviously online, but I got an Otani that's selling for $1,000. What's a number you're looking to buy at to feel good about it? Is it like a 30% knock? What are you trying to land at?
Right now we're talking. So you threw out a name, Otani, and so he is trending upwards. Okay, so that's one that even in this market, I feel pretty good about the fact that he's stable or trending in the right direction. So on one of his cards, I would probably pay, depending on the card, 60-65% of eBay. I use a formula that's net. So I tell customers, listen, if you're going to sell your card on eBay, which is a premier marketplace to sell sports cards, after eBay fees and all the fees accrued, you're probably going to take about a 15-16% hit. I'll pay you, you know, 70 or 75% of net on an Otani, which actually ends up being about 60-65% of eBay value. I use the net because I like letting customers know that, hey, I'm paying you 70-75% of net on a good card, a really good card. And that makes them feel more comfortable.
Got it. That makes sense. Some good questions coming in. So this is a very true statement. Right now, it really is a buyer's market, and that tends to help card shops like yourself because you can command better prices. All right, are all comps to eBay for you, Marcel? Is that what you're using primarily?
I have to.
Yeah,
I have to. I mean, there's just no choice. There's a lot of bad comps on eBay right now. There's a lot of market manipulation. There's just a lot of weird stuff that always existed, but now exists to a higher degree because so many people are in the hobby and there's so much money at stake. So you kind of have to sift through that, but you really have no choice. You have to use eBay as your place to comp.
Yeah.
You agree, PJ?
Yeah, I just hopped in. Unfortunately, just had to get, we had way more overflow than what we anticipated, which could be a good thing or a bad thing for sure for our flesh and blood event there. So I had difficulty with the with my cell phone trying to run it that way. So I apologize for that.
Now, flesh and blood, that sounds a little dangerous. What exactly is happening with the flesh
and blood? It's a new up-and-coming TCG. So basically, it's pretty hot. I mean, a lot of the Magic players are moving over to that or playing that in additional. First edition is out. So anything with first edition, everybody chases that. So that's kind of what created the, you know, the people just coming in wanting it, the craze basically. So, you know, this event tonight was going to be 10 people and then 18 people showed up. So we had to figure out how to get everybody in here and get that set up. So they're out there playing. So hopefully their matches take a while.
Nice. So you missed the question. The question that we were talking about was pricing and buying and selling cards in your card shop. And I know you've had the card shop open for how long now?
3 months? Since February. So we were online last year only. So we opened the shop, the location here in February. So, you know, with the, especially with my boys being 15 and 11, you know, they loved opening, you know, packs and all that kind of stuff. That's the fun part. So of course the hard part, especially with my partners and people that we have working here, you know, it's a mundane task, is you got to price everything. You know, every day you're pricing something, sorting something, 50-cent boxes, five and below boxes. And then you're adjusting prices, because if you're trying to keep up with, you know, somewhat close to what eBay is, I mean, especially in today's market, I mean, you know, a week later, 4 days later, you're changing the prices, probably lower, much lower, probably 30 or 40% lower than what they normally are.
Crazy. Where are you located? Just so folks know.
Winchester, Virginia.
Nice. What's the closest big city to Winchester? Or is Winchester, I don't think it's considered a big city, right?
It's D.C. So D.C. is probably about an hour and a half away.
Cool.
Congrats on the shop.
Oh, appreciate it. So, you know, I enjoyed your story. Heard you on the podcast. It was your podcast, wasn't it, Ty?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Probably, what, 5-6 episodes ago, maybe?
Yep.
But great story, having a shop before, getting back into it, and dealing with all the allocations again, probably.
that brings up a good point, and I think Ziggy just asked this question, right? How important is allocation of product, and where do you think allocations are in 12 months? Are all products selling? So I'll let you guys talk about it from your perspective and allocations. Kind of how do you handle that, and how do you kind of foresee it playing out the next few months?
You know, our allocations are going up already, which is a good thing. So usually when you start out with Panini or Tops, you know, they send you one case of hopefully everything. Not normally, but now Panini sending us multiple cases now. And Tops, we just got on with them. So it'll probably take maybe 6 to 7 months, I'm assuming, to get allocations. But, you know, I order everything that they put on there. I don't know if that really helps or not. I think it does. It shows that I'm not just invested in what's going to sell, but, you know, give me all those sticker albums and the sticker packs and I'll do something with them for sure.
Yeah. What about you, Marcel?
Yeah, I agree. I order all of them regardless. I think it helps. And, you know, some of those, especially the sticker items, you can use them. I mean, there's just ways to use them. When you have a hobby shop, there's always a promotion or a giveaway or something you can do with them. But, you know, I'm curious to see what happens, because as this market kind of levels off and flattens out, it's still going to be a healthy market. But as the craziness kind of dissipates, I'm really curious to see how the distributors move forward. I know how they're doing it now, and I think the game plan is going to have to change, and I think you're going to be able to probably buy again from distributors at a price which you can resell. Because I know a lot of distributors right now, I mean, it's I mean, as far as I'm concerned,
it's eBay prices, really. I mean, you can't really compete with that. I mean, you can't buy it and make 10%.
There you go.
You can't do it.
PJ, so I'll ask you, PJ. So lots of times I need a product, and I've got great relationships with these distributors. I need a product. I make a phone call or I find some guy on eBay that's selling it, and I'm getting it for less. I'm getting it for less from the distributor. Yeah.
It's tough. It's, you know, you can go to that B2B website and probably buy a case of Top's Finest on there from where you can get it cheaper than any of the distributors, because I've done it. I don't see how distributors think that a shop can make money on anything if the margins are 10 to 15%. Like, I think the misconception is, I think a lot of consumers think we get this product for a third of what we're selling it for. And even if you get into from direct, I mean, we're probably just maybe 2 to 2.5 times what we're getting it for, which is pretty fair in my opinion, if we're paying all the bills and keeping the lights on and everything. But, you know, the distributors, and then what I like is, you know, you're buying all the stuff, but then they're like, hey, you got allocated one box. Like, what are you going to do with one box? I mean, one box, I'm not going to say no, obviously. I'm going to take my one box and I'm going to pray over it and wrap it in a blanket and everything else. But, you know, it's a little different on Pokemon. Pokemon, you can get that because they only work with distributors. So pretty much all the TCGs, you can build up your allocations through there, but it's still tough. Like, I'm getting a lot less than what I used to get. That's why I have to have 6 distributors for that now, just so I can get a little bit from GTS, a little bit over here, a little bit here. And then my 2 biggest ones, I can get, you know, a good amount. But what I don't like is the smoke and mirrors. So, you know, they say, oh, well, you are allocated this. And then 2 weeks later, like, hey, we got a case of ETBs, but they're the same price as what you would buy them individually at Walmart. So then people get upset when they see that, oh, this guy works at this shop and he's going to Walmart to buy all the stuff. Well, a lot of these shops are doing it because that's essentially they're a distributor for them too. I mean, some of these shops are doing it for that reason, is because they're getting it cheaper going to Walmart than if they would get it from a distributor. So, I mean, that's a lot of honesty there as well from what I've seen going on in the industry. I don't know if you concur with that, Marcel, or not.
But you know what? You know what's interesting that people may not know is that so these prices that you're talking about, PJ, that the distributors are charging, the model for what they're doing, the reason they're continuing to do it and it's working is because of the breakers. So follow this, PJ, right? So let's say that we get a box of Top's Finest. I'm just throwing out a number. Let's say that they're selling it to us for 200, right? Distributors are selling it for 200. Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard for you and I to buy it. I don't know what Finest is at your shop right now, but isn't it like roughly around 220 or 230 or something like that?
215 is what it's at right
215.
Now.
215. So, hey, what are we going to do? We're going to buy a box for $200 to sell it for 215. Mm-hmm. But in the breaker model, where you're just selling spots, that actually works a lot better because people are much more willing to buy whatever it is, a $50 spot or an $80 spot. When you add up the spot values, they're selling their boxes at 240, 250.
Yeah, sure.
So distributors, that's what's keeping the distributor, that's what's allowing the distributors to keep their prices, I think, at the price that they're at. It's the breaker model. You and I can't do it with a hobby box. A hobby box doesn't make sense. It's like, what, I'm going to buy a box for 200, sell for 215. And there's guys out there who are still, who have heavy allocations or bought heavy right when it came out from somebody. And they're holding at a much lower price. Like, we can't do that. With the breaker, they can move that stuff and they keep supporting the distributor at that price point that the hobby shop's not going to do for just the box. So,
right. Yeah. I totally agree with that.
So how do you fix that then? You just said a few minutes ago, Marcel, you think it's going to start changing and you're going to have access to more product. Why is it going to change? And what is it you're telling the distributors that they need to do to support people like you that want to sell, you know, wax at fair prices?
Well, I don't know that that's, you know, this is a business and they're going to support whichever model keeps them in business and keeps their profits in place. So they're going to support what makes them money. And I don't know that that's the hobby shop model so much anymore. When I speak to most distributors that I know, they usually tell me that their number one or two or three accounts, all of them, they're all breakers now. Like there was a time when at the beginning, when breaking first started, where you could talk to a distributor and he'd still tell me, oh, this shop is my number one, or this shop's my number one. You call any distributor, their number one customer is a breaker. And a breaker's always going to be able to sell for more than a hobby shop. But I think the softening of the market is what's going to happen. Because watch, there's this wave of production coming in because, you know, so many people got into the hobby. So I think that the manufacturers, if I had to guess, are trying to meet that wave and all those collectors. But now suddenly the market's softened and people are getting out and they're not able to spend those dollars in the market. Well, now the manufacturers are going to be left with a lot of product. They're going to try to pass that on to the distributor. The distributor is going to want to get rid of that product. I don't know that the breaker market will be able to meet that supply chain. I don't know that they'll be able to fill that. So that's where I think in the next 12 months, there might be the chance that distributors actually get to the place where they're selling below, you know, eBay again, right? Because they're distributors. They're supposed to be selling wholesale. Or, well, they're not supposed to be. They're historically companies that sell at wholesale to retailers so that retailers can resell.
Yeah.
And that's
I'm with you on that. I'm with you. I agree. I mean, it is what it is right now. I mean, I don't think there's anything. We just have to wait. I will say, like Marcel said, I think the tide is definitely shifting more because I think breaks are getting harder to fill. And as long as their margin keeps getting squeezed, then I think hobby shops will start seeing the distributors open up first. I mean, really, to get product right now at a good price, you have to have a direct account. I mean, you have to.
Yeah.
I mean, right now. But I think you're right on that.
Yeah, I think my theory on that is once the supply chain started slowing down, it started spreading out release dates, and we would see a product, and then 6 weeks later, we'd see a product. It made it nearly impossible for a hobby shop to compete with a breaker. But now that products are starting to come out again and they're coming out week after week after week after, like the attention span of people is shifting and they're realizing, holy crap, we can't fill these breaks anymore because we can't just focus on Top's Finest for 6 weeks. We have to focus on this product for 1 week, this product the next week. And now it's starting to come back to somewhat normalcy again because the supply chain, I think, is going to come back around. I don't know. Even that's a different argument there, right? Now we can't even find drivers of trucks to get product to you guys.
That's right. I got some Score football back here, if you can see in my messy office right now. If you need some Score football, I could ship it to you. If
you shoot. I got to
bring that right now, right?
Yeah. All right. Let's shift a bit. By the way, Ronald Acuna Jr. looks like he got hurt. You guys are seeing that all over the feed. Sounds like he probably blew his knee out trying to go for a catch. Not good. So if you want to unload some Acunas or do a giveaway for an Acuna, now's the time to do it. Mike Simon just saw the video. Looks like he may have blew out the right knee. Bummer. Yeah, I'm just seeing my phone blow up here with ESPN alerts. That's never fun. All right. So let's kind of head inside the shop a little bit again. If you help people understand, like, as you run a shop, what are some of the things that consume a lot of your time that you wish they wouldn't, but they just do because you have to focus on so much stuff? And I know, Marcel, you and I talk about this offline a lot. It's incredibly time consuming to run a card shop, but give us kind of a day in the life of what it really means to run a card shop for folks.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, there's always a lot to do, especially I still have my primary business. So, you know, I own an insurance agency in Winchester as well. So like I'm getting there at like 7 a.m. We open a shop at 1. So I have partners, fortunately, so I don't have to be here, but I'm always there. I'm always there catching a delivery from about 11 till 1 until we open, and then, you know, helping stock that and everything. And I think that's part of it is inventorying in its system, pricing. Pricing takes up a lot of time. And then if you're heavily involved, you know, online through web sales or Instagram or anything like that, just dealing with as soon as you list something or a post that you're going to have this is probably the 70 to 80 DMs that you get, like, hey, can you ship me a box? Can you sell me a box? Can you do this? Which I try to, if somebody's going to take the time to try to communicate with me, I always try to respond or do what I can. But, you know, when you had 100 followers, that's okay, because you're, you know, your inbox and DMs is collecting dust. But then once you cross like 4,000, and, you know, everybody's your best friend when you have the hottest product too. So, you know, it's just that gets kind of behind the scenes what people don't see. It's hard to manage that. So the social aspect is getting harder and harder by the day to manage. But then I think the third thing is really right now how much people bring in to sell. So, you know, your focus, I'm focused on, you know, a couple things I'm trying to do in the day. And then, you know, you get five people that just come in, Pokemon singles. I want to sell my Pokemon collection. You know, I've got this box of 91 Fleer baseball cards. I heard baseball cards are worth a lot of money these days. You know, is this worth anything? Or grading, you know, are you taking submissions again? Are you doing this? So I think just those three aspects to me is just the inventory, the online communication with folks and trying to get back to people, and then just the people right now trying to sell everything.
What do you think, Marcel? You agree with all that?
I do agree. You know, it's very similar to what he said. I think one of the hardest, and we were talking about time-consuming things about running the shop, it's just like you said, people come in to sell you cards all day, every day. People want to sell you cards all day, every day. And, you know, each time someone comes in, I mean, I always take my time with everybody. Everybody's important. And, you know, if four or five people come in and you spend an average of 15 to 20 minutes with those people, that can be like 2 hours.
Yeah.
You spend 15 to 20 minutes with five people that come in to sell you that day, you know, that can be an hour to 2 hours. And then the other thing that's very time consuming is trying to sell your cards. So you've got all these people coming in every day, selling you. You're buying. To find time to sell those cards, right? Because you have to sell them, right? You can't just keep buying. You have to get them online. And, you know, I do use ComC, and we have an eBay account. I do use auction. I do use buy it now, but it's time consuming to get those cards up, and you still have to do all the other stuff, right? Customers walk in, they want to buy, they want to talk about sports. They want to talk about Acuna got hurt. You know, you're trying to fill a break. You're trying to do an event for the new TCG, whatever it is. And you're trying to get your cards online. Like, just to scan one bed of cards or two bed of cards and get them up throughout the day, you really got to find that time. Like, it's hard to find that time to get those cards up, you know? So finding time to sell all these cards that are coming into your shop, if you're buying them, is one of the things that I think if you own a card shop or you're thinking about owning a card shop, you need to really figure out how to get those cards up and sell them, because they're not all going to sell in your shop.
That's an interesting point. I wouldn't have thought of that. Yeah, that's very true. It's probably the same situation that most people are in that open cards, right? They end up opening them. It's really fun. And 3 months later, those same cards are sitting in the stack, you know, on their desk.
Well, Ty, you've got cards, and PJ, I know you've got those customers. I've got customers, and Ty's got cards, and we were all collectors at one point. It's so much fun to open. And you always say to yourself, oh, well, yeah, I'll list that card, or yeah, I'll get that up on eBay. And then you don't, right? And then you've got that customer who walks in who is going to get it up on eBay, and suddenly they're just like, here, can you just take these cards? Because I don't have the time to put them up.
Well, right? Then you buy that card, and then you realize that, well, now I'm lost money because you thought you did well because you paid 60% of eBay last sold, and then now that card's worth 50% of that. So, like, if you buy the cards now, you even have a shorter window to move those cards, or you're going to lose your butt.
That's what I said. Yeah.
Trustworthy employees must be huge. That's obviously an understatement. How hard is it for you guys to find employees these days in the sports car world? Are you finding that it's a little bit easier now that sports cards are a thing? What's your take on employees?
PJ.
You know, I'm fortunate that, you know, I have multiple partners, so we all pitch in right now. I'm assuming that eventually we'll have to hire some more. We do have a college kid that I hooked up with on Instagram last year who's into cards. Totally trustworthy kid, very good kid. Plus I have my oldest son who's 15 and my youngest son that's 11. So, you know, I can snap some fingers off if they mess around with anything in the back or anything. Except the 11-year-old, you know, he wants to open everything. He's like, oh, we got this, we got prison, we got this. I was like, you need to chill, buddy. You need to chill.
All right. So this is a big topic of conversation for me. And I've been around long enough and I've heard some real horror stories where people have employees that have been with them for over a decade and then they find them stealing on camera. And I know, you know, I'm going to give a shout out to I'll call him my mentor, Matt Fettigreen, who owns Beverly Hills Baseball Card Shop, one of the oldest card shops in the country, and a real pro. And, you know, him and I have talked about this in great length. And this is one of the things that I've always told Ty. I always look for the smartest and most capable guy, the most qualified guy. But I will take trustworthy over qualified and capable any day. So I surround myself in my personal life and at the store, but you know, it's very important in this business that you surround yourself with people that you wholeheartedly believe you can trust, because there's so many cards, you can't keep track of all of them. Every business has theft. Every business. I was just talking to someone at 7-Eleven. Did you know that I don't know if it's nationwide, but here in Las Vegas, the average amount that's stolen per day at 7-Eleven is $300 to $500. Could you imagine having a business where they steal $300 to $500 from you every day?
That's a lot of big gulps and slurpees.
Right? And I was thinking that. How is it so high with like what they sell? So anyways, I always go into my inner circle, and in the past, I feel I've done very well. I go to people that I know, people that are friends of family or family. You've got the right idea, PJ. You ended up with some partners, and you got to find people you trust. And even if they're not the most qualified, it's better to have someone you trust and grow and cultivate their knowledge in the hobby. And at least have someone that you can trust. So right now I got really lucky. I got a guy named Steven. I've known him for 15 years. And I actually have a picture of him working at my shop when he was like 14. He worked at my shop for like 3 months. I got a picture of little Steven at my at my shop. So I got a really neat guy working with me. Right now it's just him and I and two other youngins that are really great people that I've known their families. So.
That's awesome. Just to echo what Mike said, you were like my mentor in the hobby, and I'm getting ready I was getting a little red there. You probably could rewind the video and see it. I'm thinking he's going to say me, and you didn't say me. So I'm almost going to Marcel, what a great moment this is going to be.
Well, I will brown those for a second here because really, you know, I started listening to your podcast probably about a year and a half ago. That rekindled, you know, getting back into it. Cause I used to have a shop with my older brother when I was 11 years old. in the early 90s. And one of my dad owned a business park. And of course, you know, shops were popping up all over the place. So my brother was in high school and we were collecting cards, a bunch of cards. And my dad had an open space, a tenant left, and we propped up a shop. And that was like probably the most fun that I've had for like 3 years. Well, of course, I was too young to take it over. So we had to close the shop when he went to college. But what was really cool is that, you know, now that my sons are here and my youngest son was the same exact age, I remember he still comes in all the time, but opening day, a guy came in, he goes, "I don't know if you remember me or not, but I used to come to your shop when you're 11. Now your youngest son is selling cards to me." So I thought, to me, I almost got, when you get older, you get real emotional and you're almost like, what, are you so wimpy now? I mean, what is your problem? Like, seriously, I had to go like this and then, you know, kind of walk away, because that was kind of a surreal moment to me that, like, you know, we're doing this thing together because, you know, we got into it because kids really energize. I think if my kids weren't around, I wouldn't be on this podcast. I mean, I think they re-energize me to get back into the hobby because we're all into sports. Chasing cards, getting that big hit, and then, you know, running around the kitchen, say, "Oh my God, look what we got!" And then that just said, I told them stories about the shop and how much fun we had, and they're like, "Well, why can't we do a shop?" But then after I thought about it, I have a couple partners, they all collect cards too, and I'm like, "I mean, we could do this," and so we did it, and now it's like, it's probably 100x more than what I thought it'd be already, and we're having a lot of fun. It's a lot of work. But if you have passion behind it, I know Marcel's probably on the same thing. There's nothing that, you know, you can do. I mean, it just keeps snowballing, and, you know, it's not really work. It's something what you want to do.
PJ, you hit it on the dot. You know what one of my favorite sayings is? If you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
That is good.
Did I lose you guys?
PJ, put it on mute.
I'm here. I just had a little background noise. So
I was just processing it, Marcel. It was just such a thoughtful comment.
Come on, man.
That was good. That was good. All right. Hey, you brought up kids, and we only have 6 minutes left. And by the way, this is part of Hobby Palooza. Thank you so much for watching. Go to thehobbypalooza.com for the full schedule. Ziggy No is going to be on after me. You can find his link or just type in Ziggy No. But let's talk real quick about kids in the hobby, because we talk about all this stuff, prices dropping, all the business side of it. I'm probably gravitating more towards, how the heck do we keep kids involved in the hobby now? They can't even find product. I got kids on my baseball team, and they'll be like, "Coach Ty, can you give us some more cards? Because we can't go buy any cards." And it's like, this is an awful world for a kid to be a collector because they can't get cards. What can we be doing? What do you guys do as a card shop to just keep the kids involved? Like, what can we do as a team here to make sure we do our best to keep the kids involved? Thoughts?
Well, it's no different than when you call me, Ty, and you ask me for cards.
Yeah, true.
Go ahead, PJ.
That's one of our mottos, is trying to figure out how to get good cards, not the leftover Walmart stuff, in kids' hands. So a couple things, we've already done it a couple times this year, is if we get hot retail product in from our wholesale distributor, we actually release it to kids first the day before. So like we do like kids pack, we call it collector kids. So like when we had hoops basketball when it was hot, we took apart retail boxes and put like 5 packs together into like a team bag, and each kid could come in and buy that for pretty much retail. So I think we sold maybe 5 retail packs for like 15 or 18 bucks or something like that. We did that with Donruss basketball. It's just something that we always try to do. And then Pokemon, I always try to keep some of the better stuff in the back. So once the adults go through and take the good stuff off the shelf, if I see a kid come in, I'll pull out that ETB and give it to him, because we're trying to build longevity here. I'm not here to support people that want to flip a product and, you know, make 3X or 2X. I mean, they're going to come in and buy stuff. They are going to do that. But to me, I'm trying to create residual income, and that 10 or 15 year old kid that I'm helping out, they're going to be residual business 5 or 10 or 15 years from now.
That's awesome. And you know what? I'm just going to take a page from your book, because I've been trying to figure out what to do to help the kids be able to afford the packs and to start running some promotions. And so I hadn't figured it out yet. And it's one of the conversations I had with Upper Deck when I signed up with them again. Just what are we going to do for the kids, because we're alienating them. So that's great, PJ. I love that. I'm going to use that.
I got some score packs if you want to start off with these in the background.
You said you gave me good stuff, man. You said the good stuff. All right. A couple closing comments. Thanks, Lou Rock. I believe the children are our future. Oh, Wesker, great conversation,
bro.
Has Panini Crate kicked off yet? I didn't even heard of Panini Crate.
Oh, I hadn't either. Hey, can I mention something real quick before you log us off?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, I'm doing something that I've never done before, and I'm hoping it becomes a regular thing once every 2 weeks or once a month. So anyone that's listening, please stay tuned on our social media. I'm having Adrian Beltre at my store on the 26th, and he is going to break a box of cards. He's gonna do a case break with me, okay? So Adrian Beltre will be doing the case break, and I'm rolling out a project called Celebrity Breaks, and I'll be having a celebrity once every 2 weeks or every month. I'll be kicking off with Adrian on the 26th. We'll be doing a case break. So I wanted to mention that here, to get some momentum. Thanks for letting me say that.
Yeah. Well, so folks know you are the largest Adrian Beltre collector in the world. So he better gosh darn it break with you.
I am. That's the only thing I collect. So yeah. So.
No,
that's
you're good.
Awesome. I like that. That's great.
That is pretty cool. So where can folks find you? I'm going to put the awesomecardshop.com, pjcollectiblekings.com. Make sure you guys spell collectible with the K. Anything you guys want to add about your shop or closing thoughts? I'll let you guys have the floor. PJ?
Yeah, I appreciate all the support. We're definitely got some growing pains, especially tonight with the event. Now we're going to make sure everybody pre-registers before, instead of just walking in. So I apologize to you both for being a bad guest for the first maybe 15 or 20 minutes. Y'all can talk about me after the podcast ends and the YouTube stream ends, but I enjoy it. Thank you, everybody. They can find us on Instagram is where we're most active. We're on Facebook as well. Reach out to us at Marcel. I love your story. I was real excited that you were on here. I wish I had more time to talk to you, because you're definitely somebody that I could look up to. Because one thing that I was trying to do is I was reaching out to a few good shops that I know that they're trying to do the good thing. There's not a lot, like, you know, every industry kind of has like an industry group of like real, like a you know, like a mentor group, not a mentor group, but what's that word, like something of like minds, like a think tank of where they're sharing ideas, maybe like a Facebook group or something, to get shops to be better together and to actually grow the hobby with kids and everything else. So, you know, as far as that goes, I think it's something that we should be doing.
I'm going to be calling you, PJ. I've really enjoyed having you here with us. I'm on mute, I think. No?
Nope, okay. You're good. We heard you. Cool. Anything you want to add, Marcel? You got 45 seconds.
No, really, just thank you to Palooza. Palooza is awesome. And thanks, PJ. You know, it's been great having you on, and good luck. Good luck on your shop. I'm going to call you. I think we can talk and have a great hobby future together. And just always a lot of fun, Ty. Always a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you, Ty. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Welcome to both of you. Go check out the cardflip.com too. You just held up a sign. We're going to be talking about that at the National this year. For those that don't know, go check it out. go to Ziggy Knows stream and go to the hobbypalooza.com to find out the rest of the schedule for the weekend. You both have an amazing, amazing weekend. Appreciate you both. PJ, Marcel, see ya.
Take care.
I'm going to wait till 60 minutes on the dot and end this. 4, 3, 2, 1. All right. See you guys.